This is Authors in Focus.
Hi, I'm James Reed, a fantasy author publishing as JMD Reed. My first fantasy series collection is out. The first three books of the Stormblow are gathered in one amazing bundle. When Ari and Shailene are drafted into the Autonomy's Navy, their love is stressed to the breaking. Assassins, dark gods, and the demonic Stormriders are in all they hold dear. You can read the first three books of the Stormblow on Amazon, and it's free for those who have Kindle Unlimited. Today, I'm joined by Tiger Herbert. He is the author of the fantasy novel Keeper of the Flame, Beating Back the Darkness, Book 3.
How are you doing today, Tiger?
I'm doing well, James. How are you?
I'm doing good. So I always like to start out these interviews with a fun question or two. And so based off what I read of your blurb, are you a dwarf person or an elf person?
Ooh, definitely dwarves.
That's what the answer I thought I was going to get.
Yeah, yeah. How about yourself?
Dwarf person.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. I like Gimli over Legolas.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, what is your favorite time of day to write?
Really, for me, so I'm married, I have three young kids, have a dog, have a job. my favorite time of day to write is whenever I can write uninterrupted. So.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. I can understand that. I remember back when I used to work, I would be writing like breaks or just like whip out my laptop and write for like 5 or even 10, you know, minutes or just whenever I could. I had a weird job where like I could have a lot of downtime in a day or I could have like no downtime. I would never know.
Oh, yeah. Yep. I've been there. So, and yeah, I mean, with the full-time job, it's, you know, sometimes you have, you know, downtime, but a lot of times it's like, hey, do I even have time at lunch to write? Or, I'm not an early morning person though. I'm not usually when I get up in the morning, I have enough time to get to work. And I'm not one of these people who can get up at 4 or 5 in the morning just to write and then go to work. It doesn't work for me.
That's actually what I used to do. I used to like wake up an hour earlier just to write an hour before I went to work.
It's an awesome discipline, but my brain just does not like that.
Well, you know, it's just waking up for work, but you wake up like time is a relative thing, you know, so you just go to bed earlier, whatever. I don't know, that's just my take on it. Time's just an arbitrary thing humans give, you know, to divide the day up because we like doing that.
Yep, I get you.
Well, let's talk about your book series. It's called Beating Back the Darkness. Looks yep. like book 3 came out just a month ago or something like that.
Yeah, at the end of October.
Okay, but let's talk about where it starts at Dragonfire. What is it all about?
So, Dragonfire is basically the story of a world where dragons have been locked away. I'm trying to think of how to say this without many spoilers, but basically dragons have been imprisoned for thousands of years. And with the dragons being locked away, lots of secrets. So people believe the dragons to be only myths and legends. And Dragonfire starts out with a black dragon, a shadow drake, that has escaped. And he is like setting the world on fire. He's turning people to him. He's twisting people to his will to become his slaves. And the world is breaking out into war all over the place. So that's kind of where it starts out, with that first book. And he's pretty indiscriminate in his hate and destruction. So you have war being waged against all different races, elves, dwarves, humans, you name it. And so that's kind of where that starts out at. And what you have is a whole bunch of races all being like thrown into absolute chaos. And they're going to have to find out if they can form alliances that they wouldn't have normally formed to try to face off against the dragon and his army.
Right, right. I gotcha. That sounds like a great story. So Do you want to tell about any of the characters, kind of what makes them so great to read?
Yeah, so it's definitely this story is very type, kind of like classic high or epic fantasy. But what I've done different in this series is I've taken some of the races that you'll see throughout the story, orcs especially, and I've given them a different perspective. I used to play World of Warcraft years ago before I got married and when I actually had free time and stuff like that, and I really liked the Horde characters. So one of the things I wanted to do when I wrote this series is I wanted to have orcs that were more like the World of Warcraft orcs rather than Tolkien's orcs, you know, the mindless savages, more like a native shamanistic people like you see in the Warcraft universe. So does that make sense?
Mindless savages, they're creatures ruined by sin and evil, because they're elves originally in Tolkien.
Exactly. They were
perverted and destroyed, so they're like a completely ruined and fallen race.
Exactly. So my approach is very different in this. They're not just a evil race.
Obviously, because like Tolkien's whole thing was about, you know, the corruption of evil, and the orcs are a very an example of that, to sort of further the themes of the entire ledger domain of his world.
Oh, absolutely. So in my work, that's not what I was going for. I love the Tolkien work. So one of my main characters are two characters are a pair of orc brothers. One is a chieftain, and his brother is just a warrior in that tribe, and the tribes kind of have like a loose confederation. So there's all these different tribes that have come together to try to stand against their enemies. So you have two characters that are really at the forefront of the story, and you get to there's a lot of different characters going on. There's a dwarf, there's, you know, humans and elves and stuff like that. But these two, a large portion of the story is centered on, and it's their journey of how can they protect and save their people and all the challenges that come with it, but giving it from their perspective. Okay. So, yeah.
Sounds good. Yeah. I noticed there was also, I guess maybe this may be in a later book, I noticed there was some dwarf characters.
Yep.
Running around.
Yep. So, and it does start right in Dragon's Fire. So, Dragon's Fire, it starts out with, because there's so many different races and they're spread out around this one continent where the war is starting, you have different chapters that are starting out in different parts of the world, and then it kind of all comes together. And so Dominar is one of the primary dwarf characters, and basically you start out with him in his dwarven forge, inside the dwarven kingdom underneath a mountain, you know, very typical fantasy fare. And he's basically got his hammer, and he's banging away at the forge, you know, forging some piece of, you know, armor. And he's sitting there kind of fantasizing about the glory days of when you actually made armor and weapons for a purpose, not just for family heirlooms and mantelpieces. And he's kind of romanticizing it a little bit. And little does he know that what he thinks he wants is not really what he wants, right? His whole world is about ready to be turned upside down. So just kind of a little tiny juxtaposition there. But he's one of the central characters throughout the storyline. And eventually he gets to meet up with the other cadre of heroes that eventually all their paths cross, and they form this team. And he's really probably one of my favorite characters throughout the whole series, just because he's older, so he has a different perspective. He's senior to all of them, you know, dwarves and their long lifespan, so he's way older than them, but he has that age and that wisdom and insight that a lot of the other characters don't have. So he's not necessarily your stereotypical rowdy, drunken, brawling dwarf. He's a different take on that. More of a like a grandfatherly, sagely dwarf who will also charge into battle with a two-handed warhammer, right? But just a different perspective and take on it. if that makes sense.
Yeah, I got you. It's always good to try to keep things fresh.
Yeah.
So, where did the idea for beating back the darkness come from?
So it's kind of interesting. I'm kind of an accidental author. And so back in, I think it was the end of 2011, I had actually been running a blog on American football, and I was starting to go to school and taking classes in communications at night. And I was thinking that I might get into journalism, sports journalism, and I knew I wanted to do something with writing. I had already done a lot of poetry writing in the past and other types of writing, but really what I wanted to do was I had, ever since I was a kid, I had just wanted to write a story about dragons or some type of epic fantasy story. And I didn't really have a whole lot of basis for what I wanted it to be or what I would do with it or what would become of it. But I just decided one year around Christmas time that I was just going to start writing it just one chapter at a time and just see what the heck came of it. And I actually, it's kind of weird, I started it out as a blog. And I was like, well, hey, I could make money as a blogger and I'll just serially produce this chapter by chapter. And after the first like three chapters that I wrote, I was like, wow, I actually know exactly what I want to do with this whole story. Like I had a really good idea for that whole book. Now, I didn't expect it would be a series. I thought it would just be a one book. But I was like, wow, maybe I shouldn't consider blogging this. Maybe I should like take a step back and actually think about how I want to do this well, and also not put out, you know, unpolished rubbish. Because, you know, there was no editors or anything back then. I was just off the cuff, you know, writing and totally not having a clue what I was doing.
Are you familiar? You know The Martian, right? The Matt Damon movie that came out a few years ago?
I've been meaning to watch the movie, but I haven't read the book or seen the movie yet.
Well, Andy Weir, the author of it, that's actually how he first published The Martian. He did it as like a blog, and it just got really popular.
Oh, really? I knew he did it himself, but I didn't realize he did it as a blog.
Yeah, he did it as a blog originally.
Oh, wow. So how did he handle like the editing and all that? Did he just do it all himself?
I think he just was like, I don't think he had it polished up by an editor. I think he was just putting it up like he was doing it for, you know, for fun.
Okay.
You know? And then it just kind of took off for him, yeah.
Well, mine didn't take off, but that is how I start.
Yeah, I think he came in like in that time. I don't know, when were you starting this? But there was like that time, I think like in the between, before 2010, when blogs were really like working, right? Before, I think the things kind of changed, where blogs are not as effective anymore.
Well, I mean, plus it just became so saturated. Everybody was trying to run a blog two or three.
So he was so he got in there like early, I think is kind of partly what his success was.
Okay. So I didn't get a lot of attention from the blog, but the feedback I got was surprisingly, like overwhelmingly positive, even though it was not cleaned up, it wasn't polished by any stretch of the imagination. But people really liked the creativity. They liked the writing itself, even though it wasn't clean. They liked the ideas and the concepts. So I was like, hey, I think I have something here. And then I basically, you know, it took me about 2.5 years to actually get it finished and get it cleaned up to where it was a complete story. But that's kind of how it started. And it wasn't even until I was close to the, you know, probably about 3/4 of the way through that I even realized it would be more than one book. And then it was like, oh crap, what do I do? how do I do this and make it not look like I'm stretching it out for the wrong reasons? Right.
Right. Right. Yeah. No, I remember my first book I wrote. It ended up being two because I had too much like plot. I was like, I'm 100-something thousand words into this, and I'm like halfway through my outline. This is
okay.
Maybe I should split this in half.
Okay. So. Now, was that received well? with you splitting the book in two like that, or did you get
it's because well, I mean, no one had was reading it, so it's not like anyone could have complained, but it was there was a point in the story where I had it where like I had an event that was like a mirror, so like there's something that happened in the character's childhood. Okay. And this the same event now he's facing as an adult. And so it's right there, and it's right in about the middle of the outline, it turns out. So I was like, well, this is like, I could end the book here, and it would be a really good climax, right? Because it'd be exciting and action. And then all I did was, there was like some relationship stuff, and I just, instead of like having the drama of that carry over into the next book, where I was going to have it resolved sort of like three quarters of the way through what would have been the book, I just, I figured out how to resolve it right there at the end of this book, and that way it sort of had like the sort of emotional climax and a more action-packed climax all right there, and then I can go into book two and do its story. And it was kind of a different book, where because it's like they're doing military, so like the first book is the military training, and then the second book they go off and do military stuff. So originally that was going to just be all one book, so it really did fit that like it. Like, I mean, book two's whole premise was a completely different, you know, setting where they're going off to, you know, be to their military stuff, right?
So like Full Metal Jacket, right?
Yeah. Full Metal Jacket feels like two movies. It does. I love the first half and I hate the second half.
I think almost everybody says the same exact thing, but it really it feels like two distinctly separate movies. I get that. It makes sense. That was really important for me when I was writing this, because I remember one of the only things that I did that was right early on when I was first beginning to write, other than actually just doing the writing. That was the right thing to do. But one of the things that I had been reading were a lot of commentaries and critiques about people taking books that should have been one book and turning it into a series or stretching it out over multiple books. And there was a lot of negative feedback. And so one thing I really thought about, to your point about the climaxes, is making sure that even when I realized that Dragon's Fire would be the beginning of a series, I wanted to make sure that although there was a larger story arc, that I wanted to make sure each book was a complete arc in its own self, so that there could be that satisfaction to the reader. And while there may be certainly things that are unresolved and even some elements of cliffhangers, that there would still be that satisfaction that, you know, this part of the story has come to completion. There's been that climax and you get some element of resolution. So you can have that satisfaction as the reader before you're moving on to that next part of the journey, even though there's one big massive arc that carries, you know, from the first book all the way through the final book, which is the one I'm working on now. So I just thought that was really important.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a big Robert Jordan fan of The Wheel of Time, and there's one thing I learned when he got to some of his later books, especially the 10th book, Crossroads of the Twilight, is that you need to have some sort of, you know, climax for the novel and have storylines end, because that didn't happen with Crossroads of Twilight. It literally is half a book, and the book 11, if you read them back to back, they really flow well together. But you wait 2 years and you get Crossroads of Twilight, and then you got to wait two more years. And it was the worst, because nothing happened in it. It was all set up and no payoff.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
And you can lose people completely. You can get readers who are just like, nope, you're not getting me again.
Yeah. And there was already like kind of the 8th book was kind of like that already. But the 9th book was really great because it had a really good, climax. But then you got the 10th book and it kind of meandered really badly. Not quite half of the novel all takes place on the same day, and it's really just characters all reacting to the climax of book 9, because it was such a world shaking event. Like, people felt it on the other side of the continent. Okay. And it was just how all these different characters were reacting, because none of them knew what happened, but it was just like, Oh, it, but nothing happened because it was just everyone reacting to one event. So it was.
So as a reader, did you like that, or was it was it tough to get through?
It was tough to get through.
Okay, okay.
Like, yeah, I'm a big fan of his book, and Crossroads of Twilight is it's painful. Like, okay. It's better when you can read, when you can go right into the next book.
Yeah,
it's much better. But
so that was when I was writing Dragon's Fire and just thinking about how I wanted to approach writing in general. I was at the other extreme, and everything was, you know, full throttle. We're going to go, you know, breakneck pace, 100 miles an hour, adrenaline junkie style. And that first book is very fast paced. It's action from the very first page all the way through the end. And, you know, one of the feedback I got, I thought that would be great. I thought that that's what people would really want. And what I got a lot of feedback on was that, you know, pacing is a lot more than just a lot of action. Right. Pacing.
Yeah, you gotta let your readers breathe.
Absolutely. And I didn't know that back then. So what I had to do, because I have a more aggressive, more direct personality. I like to get things done. It's just kind of how I'm wired. I had to really intentionally learn how to slow down in all of the subsequent books that I wrote after that, while still having that nice increase in tempo in places, but like you said, allowing the readers to breathe, to slow down, to kind of process, and allow the characters to reflect on things and allow it to meander just a little bit. But I mean, my books they're large, anywhere from 400 to 600 pages on the novels on this series. But it's not, we're not taking 40 pages to talk about somebody's feelings. That's just really not my style.
Like I've been told I write very kind of emotional focused stuff, and even I don't do 40 pages on one thing. I mean, it might be like 1500 words, but
yeah. Well, I mean you can get a lot accomplished. You can really convey a lot in 1500 words.
Yeah I know, it depends on the book. I'm writing a very internal book, because it's a guy dealing with like basically personalities that are inside of him. So it's kind of very.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, he's a shape changer. And every time he kills somebody, he steals their identity. And he's got a lot of them. And he's having issues, identity issues now.
So. I bet he is.
Yeah. And, you know, he's also and he wasn't a willing person. Like, this was done to him, and then he was used for a while, and then the people that used them, they all got killed at the climax of the previous series, and so now he's like trying to put his life back together, right? But he's got all his demons inside of him. He's got like one guy that's like, you know, he killed his wife, and so he's out for revenge. There's a crime syndicate that wants to use him for their own purposes, and so.
Yeah. Is this, I forget the name of it, this is the Masks series that you're working on? Is
that right? The same universe.
Okay.
Well, actually, one of the characters from Masks is the main character in the series. So okay. It takes place after Masks and Jules. So Jules and Masks take place at the same time.
Okay.
Both different characters, but there's a lot of connection between them, like... some of the villains are kind of both from the same organizations. They're just doing different things in different parts of the world, right?
You know. Okay.
And two of the main characters for both series are former lovers, so they do have like a shared past, and you can explore their past from both characters' perspectives, and so it's kind of a different contextual. But they're own stories. But then Assassins is like. One of the bad guys from is about like basically a villain from each series trying to have their redemption.
Okay. In
Assassins, and so yeah.
Oh, that's pretty neat.
It's for, you know, I've been wanting to write about this assassin for like 3 years now, because I came up with this idea before I even like really wrote the series. Like, I always had the idea about wanting to do the shape changing assassin that had identity issues, but I wanted to first have them kind of be like a villain in the series. So okay. You can really see what he's like as the assassin, but now he's trying to not be that. So I think you go reading from Jules, where It's no one. It's kind of like a fairly, he's a fairly dangerous threat in that series.
Okay. That's pretty cool concept. I like it.
Yeah. Anyways, so what is up next for you though in your writing career?
So I have one more book in the Beating Back the Darkness series. So it'll be the fourth novel. There's also two other companion books as well. So it'll complete that series. It's going to be a really large novel, probably the largest one I've written. My guess is it's going to be somewhere between 170 and 200,000 words. But yeah, it's going to be massive. It's going to basically all the, I'm trying to think of what I can say, without any spoilers, basically everything that has happened knowingly and unknowingly has led to the events that are about to unfold in the final book. And there's a whole bunch of things, that have been a bunch of wheels that have been put into motion, so to speak, that the readers are not going to have anticipated. And there's been clues along the way, but I don't think very many people are going to anticipate everything that's about to happen. And basically it's kind of like a, you know, Avengers Endgame type of scenario where, I mean, the fate of the universe is going to be at stake essentially as all hell breaks loose. And our heroes that managed to survive Keepers of the Flame, which is the last book that just came out here in October, they're flying high, they're feeling great, they saved the day, they were able to go home, it's time for a happy ending, but not yet. And although they have realized how to unleash their special powers in a new way, it's not, those powers are not going to be anything near strong enough to give them victory over what they're going to face. They're going to think that they're, you know, on the mountaintop, you know, with all these incredible supernatural powers that they have. But when they are ready to face off against the challenges that are ahead, they're going to feel like they're woefully unequipped. So there's going to be basically that whole desperation of how do we stop the world from ending? And yeah, it's going to be massive.
Awesome. Awesome. So why don't you tell our listeners where they could find you on the internet to connect with you?
Ah, perfect. So first off, you can go to my website. That's tigerhebert.com. You can, read about myself, my books, or sign up for my newsletter. That's always the best way to stay in touch with me. And I do, you know, if I send out a newsletter and people reply back and forth, I always do my best to stay in touch with people that way. So if people want to reach out to me and talk to me directly, that's a good way. I do have a Facebook page for my writing. That's about the only social media I really use much anymore. I'm kind of less inclined to be on social media these days. It's more of a distraction than anything. But if you find me on Facebook, you can definitely reach out to me there. I do have Twitter and Instagram accounts, but I don't really use them anymore. So I just seem more of a distraction and not really worth the time. And of course, the books themselves, if you go on Amazon and you type in Tiger Hebert, you can find any of my books, the Beating Back the Darkness series or my Riftborn books, the Demon Hunter series. We didn't talk about that tonight, but if you like the shorter books, more like Dragonlance or maybe the Drist series by R.A. Salvatore, that might be up your alley. So yeah.
Awesome. Well, it was really great talking with you, Tiger.
Oh, likewise, James. Appreciate it, buddy.
Yeah, you have a good evening and a happy new year.
You as well, buddy.
This has been Authors in Focus. You can find my fantasy novels on Amazon. Follow news of my writing at my blog, jmd-read.com, and follow me on Twitter at jmdread. You can also join my reader group on Facebook, Fantastical Worlds of the Imagination. You can find more episodes of the podcast at
fantasy-focus.com, and wherever your favorite podcast is hosted.